The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast is brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. Mariska's Restaurant in Crest Hill, 604 Theodore Street. Family owned and operated at the same location since 1933. And Chuck's Southern Comforts Cafe with locations in Burbank and Darien. Visit chuckscafe.com. Let's drop the puck.
Welcome to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast with NBCChicago.com's James Naveau and 670 The Score's hockey guy, Jay Zawoski.
Here I am, Chicago!
Woo! Welcome into the Summer Malaise edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. My name is James Naveau from NBC5 Chicago, and with me, as always, is the one, the only Jay Zawoski of 670 The Score. Jay, let's break down all that red-hot hockey news. Oh, wait.
Okay, that's it.
Nothing's happening. Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more red-hot hockey content. No, we actually have some hockey stuff to break down. We've got, as we discussed last time, the top 20 wingers and top 20... I think that was all we had at that point, actually, right?
It was top 20 wingers and the top 20 goaltenders in the NHL.
Ah, correct. Now we have the centers and the defensemen, both of which include Blackhawks.
Yep.
You know what, though? Hockey is close. We're getting close to hockey. So we only have a couple more weeks of, like, absolute nothing, and then camp's going to open. We're going to get a ton of news there. So you've bared with us this long. It's August 27th. There is plenty of hockey on the way, so I cannot wait. I can smell it. I can taste it. I am so ready for hockey. Football is like a nice bridge. You know, we've got some preseason football, and we'll have a couple regular season games under our belt, and then the puck drops for real, and then...
Yep. We're recording this about 2 hours before Mitch Bears. Trubisky takes some reps with the first team and conclusively takes the reins as the number one quarterback, as Mike Glennon will continue to struggle. You heard it here first, folks.
All right. I'm going to hold you to that. I hope you're right.
Nah, I'm probably not right.
Mike Glennon sucks. Anyway, I do have some podcast news. We announced last podcast that the Blackhawks have donated a pair of tickets for the preseason finale against the Boston Bruins. Mm-hmm. You all know about that. Well, last podcast we held a poll and said, which opponent would you most like to see the Blackhawks play? I think we said the Golden Knights, the Oilers, the Leafs, and Canadians. Was that it? Whatever it was.
Yeah, something like that.
Whatever it was, the winner was the Edmonton Oilers. So... the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast has for you, the listener, a pair of tickets to the game on October 19th against the Edmonton Oilers to give away, courtesy of our friends at the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah!
So look for how we'll be giving that away. They need to be given away like a week ahead of time, so James and I will find a creative way to do it. Still working out the details about that live broadcast. Will happen. Don't worry, it's going to happen. So we'll get you the details there, and maybe we'll just do it that way. But... two pairs of tickets to give away, one for the preseason finale, one for the October 19th game against the Oilers. So the podcast and the Blackhawks keep giving to you guys, so we appreciate it. We appreciate your listenership. And James and I, you know, can't be thankful enough to Adam Roggewin and the people in the Hawks front office for helping us out. Every time I ask for tickets, I say, hey, send me, I'll send over my credit card number. Just let me know what you need from me. And they're like, here's two. Enjoy, you know. So every time we ask, they are happy to help. I don't know how long that will last, but hey, we'll find out. But we'd certainly appreciate it.
Well, we better start giving them away, if anything, man.
We got time. We have time.
Yeah,
I want to do it the
on.
Right way. I don't want to just half-ass, like, email or the show gets tickets. I want to do something fun, something interactive. I know, you know, Danny Parkins on The Score, the show I produce, has been doing, he's been sort of leaving tickets around town for people to find, like White Sox tickets. Maybe we could do something like that, like a scavenger hunt downtown, and the first person to find them gets them or something like that. We'll find a cool way to do it. Don't worry. But we'll work on those details and get them to you. But more things to win from the podcast. We've got lots of stuff to give away throughout the season. So stick with us. We'll be with you. And I cannot wait for the season to start. So before we get to these lists, though, last night, I think everybody, whether they paid or not, when about 10 o'clock rolled around, started to freak out looking for the Mayweather-McGregor fight. Because when something is hyped as much as that, you almost kind of have to find it. It's just curiosity, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw the fight, James, but I spent most of the night trying to find feeds of it. I was on, like, Reddit pages. I was on Periscope. I finally found someone doing it on Twitch, which is like the video game. You could like watch people play video games on there. And it was funny to see like the authorities would catch up with these people and block them. And it was like the mad scramble to find the next one. And I finally found one that gave me like the last two rounds. And I have to say, I saw like, the first two very cleanly and the last two and sort of like following along in between. I don't know anything about boxing, right? I'm not a fan of it. I think it's kind of boring. I feel the same way about UFC, frankly. But from what everybody said, McGregor was going to get his ass kicked, and he didn't. So I thought that was kind of impressive that he went 10 rounds with, like, one of the best fighters in history, or 11 rounds, and held his own. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, Jason Goff has been arguing today that Conor McGregor got the crap kicked out of him. And I got to be honest with you, I feel like Floyd Mayweather went in with a game plan of letting McGregor punch himself out in the first few rounds and then go on the attack later in the fight. That's exactly what he did. It was a different Floyd Mayweather in round like six on than it was the first couple rounds of the fight, where he was kind of running away and doing the things that, you know, Floyd Mayweather, stereotypically, everyone says, oh, he does his run and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, in the last two rounds of that fight, Floyd Mayweather wasn't running from anybody. I think I saw a stat that he landed like 60 power punches in the last two rounds of the fight, just some obscene number. And McGregor, I thought, acquitted himself well for not being a boxer, but you could tell, you know, who had the game plan, who had the strategy, and it was Floyd Mayweather last night. And in the battle of two pretty objectively terrible human beings, the wife beater ended up coming out on top.
Yeah, you cheer for the wife beater or the racist?
Yeah.
I'm always
who
like
said a racist thing last night? It wasn't like,
I know.
Oh my god.
If I'm indifferent, I find myself rooting for the underdog, right? This is kind of how I am. So I guess I was like, wow, it'd be kind of interesting to see what would happen if McGregor won this.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, go get him, Connor. I wasn't like draped in the Irish flag or anything like that. But just kind of out of curiosity, like what would it do to the boxing world had McGregor won? I think that would have been interesting. But I don't know. Does this make you more or less interested? I know you're kind of interested anyway, right?
I dabble in everything, yeah. I've been wanting to get into boxing a little bit, and I want to see two, like, professional elite boxers go at it. Now that I've seen, you know, the pound for pound, probably best of all time, go up against the, you know, weirdo, the amateur. So I want to see, like, Canelo Alvarez go up against somebody, like, truly elite. And I also don't think that if Floyd Mayweather is smart, he's going out after this, because I don't think he's ever going to be able to top this payday. And I don't think that if he got in the ring with a 27-year-old, you know, expert boxer, I don't think he would beat him.
No, and I think maybe if this fight happened 10 years ago, you know, it's not even close. But you're right about it, though. Like, you saw McGregor came out early, like, trying to knock him out quick.
Yeah.
And Floyd just sort of was like, all right, keep punching.
Yeah.
And then the last couple rounds, like, when McGregor would land a punch, there was nothing behind it. It was like, bleh.
Yeah,
he was like Glass Joe out there.
Yeah,
and his
hands were drooping down at his waist, and Floyd was just hammering him. It was crazy watching that.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought the fight could have been stopped after the ninth round, because you could tell McGregor had nothing left. And I feel like his corner convinced the referee to let the fight continue, and then by the time the 10th round started, he was just dead on his feet. There was nothing there.
Well, I don't know. I was entertained by it. I think maybe now does a boxer go fight a UFC guy in the octagon? Maybe that's like the next natural step, but that's such a huge disadvantage.
Yeah.
It's probably a bigger disadvantage. It's definitely a bigger disadvantage than UFC to boxing.
100%. I don't think there's any question about that.
All right. Well, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. I found myself getting more and more interested as it got closer and closer, and I think that's just sort of an effect of, look how awesome this is. This is going to be awesome. You should watch it. It's going
to
be awesome.
See, here's the thing. Then, like, now I wonder what happens to Conor McGregor. Like, what happens?
Oh, see, I think short of winning, this was, like, the best thing that could have happened to him, because he was way better than anyone thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he put together such a better effort, and he never got knocked down. That was sort of another thing. And there's some people argue that they shouldn't have stopped, that they obviously should have. McGregor even, you know, he didn't even argue. But I don't know. I think he comes out looking pretty good. Like, look what I did. I trained for, 8 months or whatever it was, got myself ready to fight the greatest of all time and hung in there,
mm-hmm.
you know, as well as anyone. So I don't think he loses really anything with this.
No, I don't think he loses anything. I think the question is, why on earth do you go back to UFC now? Like, you're going to make $100 million, you know, boxing? You're not going to make that in a UFC fight ever, even if you have a part of the pay-per-view receipts. I don't think Conor McGregor is ever going to get that kind of payday again in the UFC. I wonder what's next for him. I wonder if we've maybe seen the last of him in the octagon, if he's going to try to break his contract with UFC, because what's the incentive? Like, what, he's already won championships at multiple levels in UFC, and now he's made $100 million plus on a boxing pay-per-view. What's the incentive to keep going into the octagon?
It's not that it's the same thing, but it's kind of similar to, like, when you look at someone like The Rock, right, who got too big for wrestling.
Yep.
Like, I am more popular than you can afford, right?
Yep.
There's no value in me staying here. So he would come in every now and again for pay-per-views or whatever and go be an actor, go be a star somewhere else. And I think that McGregor might not fight anymore. Who knows? I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I was surprised by my excitement to watch. I didn't think that I would have that excitement as it came on. And even my wife's like, you found it? Let me sit next to you. You know, she would never in a million years watch a boxing match with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, so. The spectacle, I think, drew people in.
Definitely. All right, well, that's going to wrap up our boxing talk. Sorry if everybody just tuned out, but I think it was on people's minds. It was, you know, relevant. There's nothing much going on in hockey, so.
Yep.
But hey, you know, McGregor, he didn't lose any face. And if you don't want to lose any face either, awkward segue, you should head out to Marishka's in Crest Hill, 604 Theodore Street, 815-723-9371. They are our longest tenured sponsor, along with Triple Threat Sports. We thank them for entering our third year of this podcast, which is crazy. But they are family-owned and operated at the same location since 1933. They've got the world's greatest poor boy sandwich, the steaks, the burgers, the great seafood. My favorite thing, aside from the poor boy, of course, are the double baked potatoes and the onion rings. They're just outstanding. James loves the Icelandic cod, hand cut on premises. They've got a carry out menu and a full bar with craft beer. Banquet facilities for groups to up to 110 people. So visit Marishkas.com or check them out on Facebook at Facebook.com/Marishkas. They're open 7 days a week and close only on Christmas, Easter, the 4th of July, and Thanksgiving. When we come back, we will reveal NHL Network's top 20 defensemen right now, and we'll discuss the centers list revealed last week. This is the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Welcome back into the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. for the record, Jay and I, obviously, the listeners know, judged by the fact that we are giving away Blackhawks tickets and a jersey and a beer cooler holder and all that good stuff, they already know that we love them. But there's something else today that you and I are doing a really good job of ignoring right now for the benefit of our listeners. And you know what that is, Jay? The Arsenal-Liverpool match is on right now. My favorite soccer team against yours. And I'm recording it, and I'm not watching it right now because I wanted to give a podcast to our good listeners.
You're an American hero.
You're darn right.
I don't have any other way to say it.
So are you, man. Way to go.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're not letting our soccer rivalry get in the way of doing a quality podcast here.
Yeah, you know, I just it's just hard for me to put the time in. I got a kid. It's hard for me to, like, really commit to a soccer team like I would like to.
Mm-hmm.
But I switched providers, actually. I switched cable provider. I don't know if this is interesting to anyone, but I cut the cord. I have the PlayStation View now, and I have AT&T Internet. So the way the View works is you just, like, set a favorite as Premier League Soccer,
mm-hmm.
and it just saves all the Premier League Soccer for you. So it's going to be a lot easier for me now. Instead of remembering to tape the Liverpool game every week, it'll just be there. So I think I'll have a better, easier time to watch. So I'll be better about it this year.
Yeah.
I promise.
Yeah.
Anyway, so today, as is happening every week leading up to the season, the NHL is releasing a list. Today the list was the top 20 active defensemen in the NHL right now. And in the past weeks, we talked about the wingers, where Patrick Kane was at the top of the wingers list.
Numero uno.
Controversial goalie list last week where Corey Crawford was not in the top 10, which is ridiculous. We've not had a chance to talk about the centers. We'll get to that. But let's start with the defenseman. Blackhawks defenseman Duncan Keith comes in at number 5. And when I look at this list, I don't see a huge complaint there. I think some people lower on the list might have a complaint, but let's just go through the top 10 real quick. Eric Karlsson, number one.
Duh.
Very, no doubt. Brent Burns, number two, of course. Pretty Drew Doughty, number three.
Maybe a touch high.
A little bit. Victor Hedman, fourth.
I probably have him third then. That I think would be pretty easy for me to make that argument.
To switch Hedman and Doughty?
Yeah.
Doughty?
Yep.
I always say Doughty because there's a singer called Mike Doughty who I like. So I always say Doughty when I write it. Doughty.
Ah.
I know it's Doughty. So Duncan Keith, number five, which is about right in there, I guess. You could argue him ahead of Hedman, maybe.
I probably wouldn't, but yeah, I think that he's about right, I think, on this list. Sorry, no controversy here for me.
No, you're right, though. It is right now. So you have to base it on what you saw last year, and I think right now that's a fair place for Duncan Keith.
Yeah.
PK Subban, number six. Roman Josi, number seven. Chris Letang, number eight. Shea Weber, number nine. Ryan Suter, number 10. My guy, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, is at 11, and Dustin Byfuglien at 12. So I don't really have a – I think that is probably the top 12 defensemen. I think you could probably flip around some in the top five. You could probably flip around some in the bottom five. But I don't have a huge issue with really anything, which is kind of boring. But it's funny. You know, Duncan Keith is such an important part of what the Hawks do and what they're going to do for the next couple of years. And not that being number five is a slap in the face or it shows that he sucks or anything like that. It's obviously not true. But with any sort of decline and with, you know, the decline of his fellow defensemen like Brent Seabrook and the loss of Nicholas Hjalmarsson, I wonder how much longer Duncan Keith's going to be able to play at this elite level with so many miles on him, with such reliance on speed. I don't know. I just when he goes, it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And there's no one near close to being able to replace him in the system. That's the guy who, if the Hawks are going to contend, I think maybe more than anyone on the roster, Duncan Keith is going to have to be that guy who they can rely on for, you know, 20, 25 minutes a game at top level if they're going to be competitive.
Seems totally fair that we're asking him to do that as he's entering, what, his 13th or 14th NHL season. By the way, we need you to be a Norris-caliber defenseman this year. We know that you're getting up there in age. We know that you've got a lot of miles on your legs, but we need you to be Norris caliber.
Well, maybe not Norris caliber, but he needs to, like, here's the thing. He needs to stay at least as good as he is now for the next two or three years.
Big ask, man.
It is a big ask. I know, but when you see, this is the deal. When you have players of Duncan Keith's caliber that are generationally Hall of Fame automatic defensemen that have been part of your team for so long, it's hard to, like, you're not going to find a guy like that in the draft, because first of all, you're drafting too low to get a guy like that, and the opportunities just aren't there. Every pick is low, so and with the cap you can't go sign one, so when this whole thing falls apart, whether it's in 5 years, whether it's in 3 years, whatever it is, when it all falls apart, it's going to be rough for a couple of years. And, yeah, this year they're playing a lot of young defensemen. I still don't know what the plan is. I still think they need a veteran on the blue line, but we'll see what happens. But maybe that's the plan. Like, we have to find who it's going to be. So let's play these guys and see what's there and just sort of have a quick turnover situation. But, you know, he's going to be good for another 3-4 years for sure. A good player, a plus player, all those things. But they need him to carry the load. And unless one of these young guys steps in and becomes a star like Connor Murphy or something like that, if he's not as good as he was last year, if he's a notch or two below, they got some big problems.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I think we've already discussed how the lack of depth could end up being an issue. But at some point, if Duncan Keith ends up taking a step backward in terms of his effectiveness, you're not only going to be running into an issue with a lack of depth, you're going to be running into an issue of a lack of star power, too. And I think if there's anything we've learned in the NHL is you have to have that shutdown blue liner in order to be successful. I mean, you look at basically any team in the league, and they have that's any good, and they have a guy that is capable of going out there and forcing an opposing coach to change their game plan whenever they're on the ice. I mean, Nashville, hell, they've got like two or three of those guys. Yeah. Yep. And they're all on this list. All three of them.
And Yossi is what? Seventh?
Yep. He's right behind Subban. And then Ryan Ellis is 19th. And by the way, I think Ryan Ellis is too low. I think that he's better than that list gave him credit for.
I think Cam Fowler, who's at number 20, has an argument there too, but we'll get back to that in a second.
Sure. I think that, you know, you're getting into, and then obviously our guy OEL, who I like how a Twitter fan last night was like, Jay, your guy. And I'm like, OEL's my guy too, man. I'm constantly beating that Coyotes drum. How dare you besmirch me like that?
Well, you're the general Coyotes guy. I'm the specific OEL guy. But speaking of the Coyotes, man, do you see a scenario in which Connor Murphy can develop into not Duncan Keith, not Hall of Famer, guy that other teams plan for?
That's tricky. I don't know.
Can he be a number one, I guess, is my question.
I don't think so, but it would not, like, stun me to the ends of the earth if he did. I think that he has upside. But I think that if he can be a solid number two or three blue liner, I think it was worth the investment based on the fact that it balances out your pairings more because he's right-handed. So I would consider successful if he was a number two or three guy. I would consider it a blockbuster if he can develop into a one. And like I said, I don't see that happening, but it wouldn't stun me if it did. It wouldn't be like, no, he's a bum. He's never going to be a one. No, that's not the argument that I'm going to make at all. So, no, I think that he could very easily be a great complementary piece to Duncan Keith on that top pairing if they use him that way. Or he could be a shutdown second pairing guy if they end up bumping Seabrook up to play with Keith on line one.
Well, as we're talking here, I'm thinking about teams that have won the Cup recently without a great defenseman. And Chris Letang is very good, but was not part of either of the last two Penguins Cups.
Which leads me to ask, why on earth is he number eight on this list?
They got to throw a Penguin in there.
I guess,
I think it's,
man,
like an NHL rule. And we shouldn't bitch because we're Blackhawks supporters, and it's the same deal with the Hawks. But, yeah, Letang struck me a little high there. He's still very good. But, see, I don't know if I'm, you know, it's a Stanley Cup final, and the Hawks are playing the Penguins. If I'm listing my list of concerns, Chris Letang is not one of the guys I'm super concerned about,
no,
right? You're thinking Crosby. You're thinking Malkin, obviously. You know, Phil Kessel. Guys like that. Guys up front. So when you look at those Penguins specifically, that's sort of the exception of the team that they've won cups without an elite stud Norris-caliber defenseman playing for them when they won. And when you look at the Hawks sort of building, when you look at the forward depth throughout the system, that's sort of impressive. They've got a lot of guys on the horizon for the NHL with Alex DeBrincat and Alex Fortin and all these guys who have, you know, been in the pipeline for a couple of years now working their way up to the NHL. Up front, I think they're going to be okay, especially Brandon Saad is back. You know, you still got good, you got Patrick Kane in his prime. You've got Jonathan Toews still playing well. All those things. I think up front they're going to be fine. Can they get to that point where they're so good offensively that they can sort of win despite not having a great defenseman? That's going to be the question, because I don't know how they're going to find someone like Duncan Keith or someone like the Brent Seabrook of 4 or 5 years ago to come in and be that number one. Or even like Nicholas Hjalmarsson. I don't see anyone in their system now that's going to be that good. So that's going to be the only other way they can do it. If they win with offensive firepower and just win every game 6-4 or something like that, that's going to be their probably best shot to maintain success over the next, you know, 5 to 7 years.
I definitely would agree with that. There is something that you just said that I feel like I didn't even think about this as a potential topic today, but you reminded me of it when you brought up the name Brandon Saad. I don't know if you ever listened to WGN Radio, but
never heard of her.
Their advertising campaign right now for the Blackhawks is that they're getting the band back together. They play all the Blues Brothers clips and all that. And it's part of a larger advertising push that we've seen with the Blackhawks. They pushed really hard when tickets went on sale last week.
They really did.
I don't really remember them doing that in recent years. Do you? Like, that to me, like, with the flash mobs and the billboards and all the stuff that they did, that was kind of surprising to me. I feel like the last few years, Blackhawks tickets have pretty much sold themselves. And this year, I feel like they really, they went balls to the wall selling them. I've definitely noticed that. Have you?
I did notice that. I'm glad you brought it up because it had been probably a week, so it sort of like disappeared in my brain. There was a definite more tickets are on sale, like a week up to it, campaign. Tickets are on sale Monday. Tickets on sale Monday. Blah, 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 blah. And I felt that when I was hearing from people buying tickets, they weren't saying, oh, man, I'm locked out. Which game should I go for? It didn't seem like it was such a difficult thing this year. The other thing I heard a lot about is how expensive tickets were.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of counterintuitive. If they're afraid they're not selling tickets, why raise ticket prices, right? Mm-hmm. But those decisions were probably made, and I don't know this for sure, but I think those decisions were made before they were eliminated in a first-round sweep.
Yeah.
The ticket pricing for next year, for this coming year.
Do you think they worry about an enthusiasm gap because of that?
Yes.
Mm.
And I think they're right to. I think they're, you know, the problem is when the Hawks have... They won so many cups right away, right? They got the attention. They won. They won. They won. But that's fragile, right? So that's a fan base that, yes, a lot of these new fans have come on and become diehards for sure. And it's great. And you know me. I never criticize people for jumping on a bandwagon.
Nah,
it's great. The more the merrier. But the problem is some of those people that were super into the Hawks when they were really, really great, even if they weren't winning the Stanley Cup, they're going to start to fall off a little bit. Because it's been a couple of years since they've put together a good long playoff run where they've been at the forefront of all the news stories, where they've been the best team in town. Now with the Cubs taking a lot of that attention away, I do think that you're going to see a dip in Hawks enthusiasm this year unless they come out guns blazing and unless they have a long playoff run again next year. I think you are going to start to see over the next 2-3 years a big drop in Blackhawks enthusiasm. And I think it may have started already, and I think the Hawks know that.
Yeah, and I think they're trying to get out ahead of it. And I think another part of the reason why the enthusiasm may have waned a little bit is, as you said, the ticket prices have consistently gone up every single season, like clockwork. And you ultimately run the risk of pricing out your diehards. And I know that when you're running good, when everything's going great on the team, you can make that argument like, yeah, who cares? We get the casual fan in here. They're going to buy the tickets. It doesn't matter. But you go out in the playoffs in the first round 2 straight years like they did, that starts to not be the case anymore. And like you said, I think they made the decision well before they got eliminated in 4 games by the Predators. I just have found it very, very interesting that they ended up doing just such a concerted push. It definitely was noticed, and I will say it was pretty clever too. I think they did a lot of really interesting things, so I'm glad to see that John McDonough's promotion operation is still able to kind of churn it out when they need to.
And you see that they're appealing to, not, they know the diehards are there and they're not going to go anywhere, right? You've got the diehards saying, look, we have suffered through, you know, 50 years of crap. And now the Hawks are really, really good. So 2-3 years of a tough playoff run are not going to ruin the diehards, right? If they live through the Wirtz era, they can live through this. But it is that fragile fan base that they're trying to keep, that young fan base. And that's what you see with the flash mobs and Tommy Hawk on top of double-decker buses and, you know, the grab at nostalgia from the team that won in 2010 and 2013.
Yep.
The band's back together, all that stuff. That's what they're trying to keep. They don't want that casual new fan base to die off or fade off. And it's going to happen. They just need to get control of how harsh it's going to be, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, at least it's interesting to me. I don't know if our listeners feel the same way, but I definitely noticed it and was intrigued by it.
Well, it's going to be interesting for us too, because we can, now that we have this new podcast provider, we can literally gauge, you know, interest, at least in our podcast, like, hey, how is,
stay,
you know, this month compared to
us
last month? So far they have been, and we've had a lot of feedback this summer, and I told you the numbers a couple weeks ago, they're really good. But it's interesting. I am a little bit concerned just based on their push on ticket sales. They know stuff, you know, they're ahead of it. They've been running, you know, marketing research and all those things to gauge interest. And I wonder if, you know, kind of the lack of excitement about the draft has frightened them a little bit. There's a lot of things that could go into this, but I definitely think they are concerned a little bit about you know, the future, you know, the future success of ticket sales and things when they're not able to contend for the Stanley Cup year after year after year. They're going to be good for a long time because they've got a good coach, a good GM. They know what they're doing. They're a good organization. But to be Stanley Cup contenders year after year is tough for anybody. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, the next 5 to 10 years, how it's going to stay. Is the fan base going to stay and grow, or is it going to sort of hover where it's at, or is it going to drop a little bit? If I had to put my money on it, I would say it's going to drop.
Probably, but I think they'll figure out ways to incentivize new fans even as that starts to happen, and I think that's all, it's all part of the business, man.
All right, we're going to take another time out. When we come back, we will give you, we'll discuss last week's, I'm sure you've seen it by now, but James and I have not talked about it, the top 20 centers on NHL Network's list. But before we do, if you want to order your number 5 best defenseman in the league, Duncan Keith jersey, you can go to Triple Threat Sports and it will look awesome, look just like it looks on the ice. But did you know they're also the best place to go if your team needs jerseys? Whether you're an elite travel, high school, or college program that needs outfit hundreds of kids, or if you're a beer and pizza league team with 12 players, Triple Threat can put you in pro-quality jerseys at pricing you can afford. Triple Threat Sports can work with you on every aspect of the job. Logo design, fitting, apparel for off-ice, you name it. And you don't have to be a hockey player to wear uniforms from Triple Threat. They can get uniforms and apparel for all sports. Baseball, softball, football, lacrosse, and more. So for more info, call Chris at 708-478-6090. That's 708-478-6090. Or email him for more info at chris@triplethreatsports.com. Triple Threat Sports, if you can wear it, they can make it. We will be right back with the NHL Network's top 20 centers right now after a short timeout. This is the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Welcome back into the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast, where we're raining on your parades and raining punches down upon you while talking about boxing and ticket sales and all the good stuff you would expect from a hockey podcast, dying for it to be September. Jay, before we get into the top 20 centers in the NHL, I got to ask you a question, man. What's going on with Will Butcher?
I don't know. I don't think the Hawks are interested, to be honest with you. I don't think they're in the mix. I don't know. I just, you know, they're always in the mix for these college free agents, and if they're not, something tells me they don't think he's that great.
I have seen him play. He's pretty solid. And it's not like the Blackhawks are dealing with a bumper crop of defensemen right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just, you know, I think that their amateur scouting department has earned the benefit of the doubt. So if they're not into it, I'm not going to be super mad. There's got to be a reason. There's got to be something they know, you know, that is keeping them uninterested. It's funny that he's kind of – I like that Butcher's like, talk to me. I'll talk to all 30 teams. I don't care. You know, sell me on your team, and I'll see if I want to play there. It doesn't have anything, you know, set in stone. I kind of like that approach, which doesn't eliminate anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it also makes everyone else very itchy, and it probably is good for him because – if every team's in, he's going to get better offers.
Right, but if every team's not in, like the Blackhawks are clearly not in, then, you know, the market's a little bit different than I anticipated. I really thought the Blackhawks were going to at least kick the tires on him.
Yeah, I was surprised they did not. But again, I'm going to withhold outrage just because of my trust level in the staff and what they know. And maybe they feel like they've got some great stuff coming through with Jan Ruda and the other guys they added this offseason to the defensive core. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't understand it, but hey, we're going to see. Maybe he will. Maybe they'll shock the world.
Shock the world, man.
No one knew they were trading Artemi Panarin for Brandon Saad. No one knew they were trading Nicholas Hjalmarsson.
I definitely kept pounding the trade Artemi Panarin drum, but no, I did not envision that was how that was going to go.
Yeah, the two of us, I think, were pretty vocal about that. By the way, we did the top 20 defensemen and didn't give you all 20. So let's just, before we get into the centers, I'll just go through the top 20 real quick. Carlson, Burns, Doughty, Hedman, Keith, Subban, Josi, Letang, Weber, Suter, Ekman, Larson, Bufflin, Werenski, Petrangelo, Shattenkirk, Hamilton, McDonough, Giordano, Ellis, and Fowler. That's your top 20 NHL defensemen right now. Cam Fowler should be higher. That's my beef, I guess, with that thing, but I mean,
Ryan Ellis should also be higher, and I think Chris Letang should be lower.
Agreed. Screw you, NHL Network. No. By the way, I should reference the outstanding interview I had for the podcast last week with Mike Rupp.
It was probably 25 terrible.
Minutes. No, it was 25 minutes of red hot hockey action. And I kept saying to him, dude, I could talk to you for an hour, but I know you have to go. But one more question. I think I did that four times. Then I hit on our recording software here, hitting space bar is what stops the recording. I hit it. The wheel started spinning and went and just the whole thing exploded. And typically with Adobe Audition, it will save your work. It'll say, you know, audition wasn't closed properly. Do you want to restore your session? You hit yes, and at least a big part of it will be left. Completely gone. No trace of it anywhere. I've never seen that happen before. But Mike Rupp was great. We will have him on again before the season begins because I was impressed with how good he was and how plugged in with the Hawks he was. He really knew his Blackhawks. He agreed with us. Jonathan Toews, which we'll get to here in a second, is not the 12th best center in the NHL. He had him way higher than that. He also believes that Corey Crawford belongs somewhere in the middle of the top 10, which is fair.
Fair.
And said that his mind was changed on Corey Crawford. He said didn't believe in him much at first, but as time's gone on here, he's proven himself to be an elite goalie. So it was a really good conversation, trust me.
Yeah, and listeners may be confused as to why I'm giving Jay crap about it not being a good conversation. I was not an active participant in that interview because I decided it'd be a good idea to go down to Kentucky to watch some solar eclipse last week. So
how was it?
I running the risk of being assailed for being a naive person or a nerd or whatever, it honestly is one of the most breathtaking things I've ever seen. It honestly was incredible, and I'm glad I made the trip because that's something that you can always go, hey, I've seen that, and it was freaking epic. It was so cool watching, like, as the moon finished going in front of the sun. There's just, it's hard to describe the, like, kind of the electricity in the air when it does that. And I ended up getting some really good Facebook Live videos for NBC, but that was definitely secondary to the fact that I had a lot of fun going down there. And I also met a couple of Twitter fans of mine, and I believe they've listened to the podcast before. It was kind of weird. They came all the way down to Hopkinsville because I said it wasn't going to be cloudy like it was in Carbondale, and sure enough, they showed up, and I talked to them. So shout out to Bagman928 and Ivy Chat for hanging out during the eclipse. It was a good time, man.
Very cool. How was the ride home?
Terrible. I never want to do that again, ever. It literally...
Would you do it over again?
I would do it over again, but I would definitely bring, like, I don't know, like, more snack items for that ride home. It took us 6 hours to get out of Kentucky, but once we got out of Kentucky and got into Indiana, everything was gravy. So, yeah, it was hell. Not gonna lie, the trip down was, like, took 5.5 hours. It was a cinch. The trip back was absolute hell. Ugh!
We had Addie's good friend went down. Her whole family, our friends, went down to Nashville. They made like a week of it. They went down there, had a vacation, then they came back the day after. So I saw, her friend is 7, and I said to her, like, hey, how was the eclipse? It was awesome.
Yeah.
I go, oh, really? How was the ride home? Shit, it was terrible. It was so funny.
I feel like it's definitely, that's like the universal experience is the eclipse was breathtaking and amazing and gives you chills. The ride home was friggin' atrocious, but would everybody do it again? I think for the most part, yeah, everybody would do
cool.
it again.
I'm just reminded of when we drove to Florida to visit my wife's grandmother, and that was last spring. And getting down there was cool, not too bad. Coming back, like, through Georgia, we spent the entire day in Georgia.
Yep.
Like, just stuck on the highway, and I was so, like, I'm very patient. You know me, like, I don't get fired up. I don't get really mad. It takes a lot to set me off. And I was like, I said to Hope, it was like probably 11:30, and I'm like, you have to find a hotel right now because there's no way I'm getting to Chattanooga. There's no way I'm going to make it and be sane and not, like, just get out of the car and murder somebody because I was just, the entire day of bumper-to-bumper traffic is probably the worst experience I've ever had.
Yeah. Just imagine your commute into work times 50. That's how bad the traffic was for that.
And Georgia, aside from Atlanta, is that the greatest place in the world to, like, have to pull off and go to the bathroom? We went to this place in Butts County. That's what it's called, Butts County.
Yeah.
B-U-T-T-S County.
Team Butts.
And I'm not kidding you. It was like a kind of like a Casey's General Store, like a bigger gas station, but not quite a rest stop. They had a rack. You know the shirt Larry the Cable Guy wears? Like the cut-off denim shirt?
Yeah, get her done.
They had a rack of those shirts in every color of the rainbow. Like every orange, yellow, pink, purple, blue, green. Any color of Larry the Cable Guy. Confederate flag shit everywhere. There was a hat that says we don't call 911 with a pistol on it. Like, can we just pee and get out of here as quickly as possible? I just heard the banjo music from Deliverance playing in the background. I'm like, we need to go. We need to get the hell out of here now. Anyway, all right. So the top 20 centers right now, just to make sure we get through all of them, I'll just count them down. McDavid, number one. Crosby, number two. Malkin, number three. No complaints there. Pretty obvious. Matthews, number four. Nicholas Backstrom, number five. John Tavares, number six. Steven Stamkos, number seven. Tyler Seguin, number nine. Number eight. Ryan Getzlaff, number nine. Mark Scheifele, number 10. Patrice Bergeron, 11. Jonathan Toews, 12. Anze Kopitar, 13. Eichel, 14. Draisaitl, 15. Johansson, 16. Barkov, 17. Carter, 18. Kuznetsov, 19. And Monahan, 20. So here's what I'm doing with this list. I'm taking Bergeron and Toews and Kopitar, so 11, 12, 13. I'm moving them behind Tavares at 6. So they're 7, 8, and 9. And I'm happy with the list.
Ryan Getzlaff being number 9 is stupid, and I don't like it.
I think Tyler Seguin's too high, too.
I would agree with that. I think that's more of a reputation thing than an earned spot.
I just, you know, let's focus on Toews here, because this is kind of what's bothering me about it. And part of me feels like this is released to stir up controversy, right? To get Hawks fans talking. Corey Crawford being off the top 10 is inexcusable. I don't care what you think of him. If you're one of those guys that doesn't think he's great, he's still a top 10 goalie in the league. There's no doubt about it. There's nothing you could look at that says he's not top 10.
Yeah.
Jonathan Toews, if you want to look at his stats and focus on that alone, fine. I'll give you that argument. But no one who watches hockey with any sort of critical eye says Jonathan Toews is not a top 10 center. There's no way in hell. He does literally everything well. What was that? What are you doing?
I don't know.
Are you power washing your laptop?
No.
What was that noise?
I have no idea.
All right. Well, we're all going to die. But anyway,
Yay. Before
I do, Jonathan Toews should be in the top 10. He's an all-around player. And I think if there was a draft held today, right, let's say the whole league, you hit the reset button, and every team is picking again, how long do you think it takes for Jonathan Toews to get picked? Among centers.
You got to keep in mind age and contract, too, when you're talking about an exercise like that. So,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think he's probably top 10 centers, but probably like number 9 or 10. I don't think that he goes much higher than that because of his age and because of his contract. But I still think he's top 10.
Yeah, I think somewhere in a 6, 7, 8 range. I still think if I have a game to win, are you taking him over Tavares?
Yes.
If it's game 7, who do you want out there, Toews or Tavares?
I would take Toews.
Toews or Stamkos?
I would take Toews.
Toews or Seguin?
Lean Toews.
Toews or Getzlaff?
Ah.
Right. So that's kind of my point, right? That's if you get the thing is right now. We're talking about right now. That is how the NHL Network is labeling their list, the top 20 centers right now.
Yeah.
So if I have a game to win and I have 20 centers to choose from, Jonathan Toews is the top 5 for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just a homer. Maybe I'm in-town stupid or in-town blind.
I think Leon Draisaitl being number 15 might be a touch low. What do you think?
I agree with that. I do agree with that. It's just, but see, that's the thing. This right now thing has sort of put them in this hole, right? Because right now, Draisaitl is coming off an awesome year where he was one of the best players in the league. So you can't say, well, he hasn't done it long enough. It doesn't matter. We're talking about right now.
Yep.
Right? So, yeah, he should be higher for sure.
And then we have to get to the elephant in the room because we've completely ignored it to this point. Connor McDavid ranked ahead of Sidney Crosby on this list.
I think I don't have any problem with that. I think that he is
coming off
generationally
back-to-back
great.
Cup wins and how good Sidney Crosby is and continues to be. You still would not have him above Connor McDavid?
I don't think so. No, I don't. Last year, yes. I think that McDavid took the step over him this year.
Hmm.
I really do. And you look at just the sort of the talent on the team as well. And Crosby's got a much better supporting cast than McDavid. And McDavid is still unstoppable.
Hmm.
You know, that to me is, he's a guy that can do it himself. And now he doesn't have to because he's got some talent on that team finally. But I think he's great. I think that when it's all said and done, he'll be probably remembered as the best player of this generation.
Wow. Big words from Jay Zawoski. I don't like it.
And Crosby's great. I'm not knocking Crosby.
No.
You know, they're interchangeable. But if I'm, again, the word is right now. And right now I'm taking Connor McDavid. I think that he is, when it's all said and done, I hate doing the Mount Rushmore thing, but he will be a Mount Rushmore type player.
Wow. Jay Zawoski bringing the hot takes today.
I don't think it's a hot take to say Connor McDavid's going to be really good at hockey. Whoa.
Yeah,
hot take.
Nuclear.
Put me out with Stephen A.
Yeah. Cholula.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you guys got to do this. I thought like, wow, Cholula sent me more stuff. No, I signed up for this thing online. By the way, this is not an ad. I'm just truly a fan of Cholula. It's called the Order of Cholula. It's like this little fan club you sign up for online, and they send you stuff. I got a bottle of sweet habanero Cholula the other day, just randomly out of the blue. That's pretty cool,
man. You're doing the Noah Syndergaard thing. He's the one. What? He's the one hawking that, and you're falling right into his clutches, man.
Oh please, I was hawking Cholula long before Noah Syndergaard was a scratch in his daddy's pants, my friend. Come on.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew that metaphor was coming. coming.
Why?
And
is that my go-to pre-born joke?
No, it's the go-to pre-born joke of anybody over the age of 40.
Well, I'm not over 40, so kiss my ass. Jerk. All right. So, yeah. I think everyone agrees, including Mike Rupp. He sort of, like, threw the phone, rolled his eyes when I said Taves 12. And I think he felt the same way for Patrice Bergeron as well.
So you say.
You're just going to have to believe me on this. He also said I was the greatest interviewer he's ever spoken to. You're just going to take my word for it. And he said I sounded very handsome.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are going to take one more break and come back and do our email segment where we will reward an epic hockey card. I've already chosen it, and it's amazing. And give away a breakfast at Chuck's Southern Coverage Cafe. This is the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Email the guys at madhousepod@gmail.com or follow them on Twitter @madhousepod.
The email segment's brought to you by our friends at Chuck's Southern Comforts Cafe with two locations in Burbank, 6501 West 79th Street, and in Darien, 8025 South Cass Avenue. Visit chuckscafe.com for details. They offer the best in barbecue, Mexican, and Cajun fare, including my favorites, the Chicago Wings, the Cochinita Pibil, the barbecue nachos, the jambalaya, all are fantastic. Their daily specials are where it's at. If you're going to Chuck's, make sure you check out the daily specials at chuckscafe.com. You'll find something you love there. Make sure you get the cobbler, by the way. It's like a hot apple or peach or whatever pie with ice cream on top. It is insane. One of the best things you'll ever eat. That's there every day. They've got a fantastic bar with dozens of craft beers and an ever-rotating beer menu. They offer catering services, banquets, and more. And they've appeared on Chicago's Best, Food Network's Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and tons of cooking shows like that. So visit Chuck's Cafe or follow them on Twitter @ChucksCafe. We thank them for their continued support of the podcast. First email here from Nicholas Malone. Maloner Boner, our guy.
Maloner Boner, yeah.
Just quick email here from him. He says, Phil Kessel should make a guest appearance on the I'm Fat podcast. I agree with that. And he said, this is a picture of Phil Kessel eating the hot dogs out of the Stanley Cup, which is the greatest thing ever.
Yep.
He says, I'd rather eat off a public toilet seat than out of the cup. Players have done disgusting foul things on and to that Stanley Cup. It's cleaned all the time, though. Would you eat out of the cup, James? Would you, like, put cereal in there and eat out of it?
Oh, I would definitely eat out of it and get the bubonic plague, and I wouldn't give a crap.
Yeah, I agree. And then, maybe it would depend on, like, who had it before me. Like, if Andrew Shaw was the guy with it before me, I might think twice. I might lay some, like, aluminum foil down there in the top before I do anything. But, if it's a classy guy,
what would you eat out of the cup? That's the big question.
That is a good question. I'd probably fill it with wings.
Oh, yeah.
And just eat wings.
That's
my favorite food. I love wings, as you can tell, because I'm a big fat guy. Next email here from Brandon, one of the hooligans from the Mariska's remote, he tells us.
Ha!
He says, I know you spoke about maybe having a contest to see who gets into the fantasy league at a remote, but I'm giving it an early shot with his fantasy team name, E equals MC David. All right, you're in.
I like it. He's in.
All right. He's in. Brandon's in.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're going to figure that out. I got to get through my football draft first, all right?
That's kind of where I'm at, too. Yeah.
let me get there, and then we'll figure the other thing out.
Yeah.
All right. Another email here from – oh, by the way, back to what's his name? Bonerface or whatever it is. The toilet seat thing. I have a beef right now, okay? Oh. Here's the thing. If you are one of those people whose ass – I may have done this before, so stop me if I have – if you feel your ass is too precious to touch a toilet seat and you have to lay down the strategically placed toilet paper, when you're done, put the paper in the toilet. Don't just leave it sitting on the toilet seat for someone else to deal with. So if you can't touch your ass to the seat, why should I have to touch my hand to your paper? Jerk off. All right. It happens all the time. And the other thing is, who are these people that don't flush their shits?
That's
like,
true.
I'm at work. I'm going to take a dump. I'm done. I'm going to stand up and leave. What? There's 6 pounds of human feces in there. Can you please do something with it? So I don't have to walk into the bathroom.
And you can't even blame Matt Abaticola anymore.
No, he would never do that. You can't walk in after having an egg sandwich for breakfast and seeing that and going, oh, come on. That's the first thing I got to see. I'm just getting to work, which sucks enough. And then I got to look at that? Come on. What's wrong with you people? All right. Email here from... He says, I saw James tweeting about the Winnipeg Jets fans being bullish on their squad this year.
Extremely.
What teams do you see being a surprise contender that can make a deep run? You can't take Nash Vegas again, Jay. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know. What's this sudden Jets confidence? Is there something I missed? Something I'm forgetting? Did they add a player of great talent?
Their insistence is that they were victimized by the injury bug last year and still managed to get a decent number of points. And the reason that I brought this up was because Sean Tierney is doing his projections for the number of points that teams are going to get. And he had the Jets, like, I think at like 101 or something like that. And I was just like, no, that I don't see. No,
that's
100 points for the Jets. I don't see it.
No, maybe
he had the Blackhawks at like 91, I think, by the way. So not bullish on the Blackhawks at all.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I think that, you know, right now I'm sort of in a mindset, too, of like, okay, Hawks, show me.
They're in a prove a year. They definitely are.
You think they're going to improve this year?
No, I said they're in a prove it year.
Oh, in a prove it year. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Email here from Marshall Lewis. Really nice email. He says, my name is Marshall. I'm a longtime Hawks fan and originally from Lincolnwood, Illinois, and I'm currently active duty Air Force. I spent a few years in Florida and I'm currently stationed in Georgia, where I also play in a beer league in Atlanta.
You just insulted Georgia, and now we've got this guy. Hey, poor Marshall.
He's not from Georgia. He's stationed there.
Fair enough.
He says, I love listening to your podcast, and it saved me from countless hours of insanity, especially on my current deployment in Qatar. Well, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
That's awesome, Marshall. I'm glad you enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed my toilet rant. when you're good God. Talk about entitlement.
Yeah.
I feel like such a jackknife.
First
right now.
World problems.
Yeah, how about it? This guy's in Qatar defending our country, and I'm complaining about touching butt toilet paper. he says, I'll get to the point. The Hawks' window to win is closing. Yep, we sort of discussed that earlier. There are at least three teams in the West alone, Edmonton, Nashville, and St. Louis, regrettably, that I think could beat the Hawks come playoff time. With some of the younger players, there's still a chance to win one last one before certain veterans, Siebes, Keith, etc., inevitably show their age to the rest of the league. So the question is, I can't be mad if they don't for the next 20 years, but do you think the Hawks have a chance to win one more before that window closes? / what would need to happen, or when is it time to accept the rebuild like the Sox have? Well, I think you got two different questions there. I do think they maybe have one more cup in them. If Nick Schmaltz can become maybe not an all-star, but close to all-star level player, if Alex DeBrincat's the player you think he is, and if one or two of these young defensemen pan out quickly, I think you could see them contend for a cup again. And if you're contending, you have a chance to win one.
Yeah.
As for rebuilding, I think as long as you have Patrick Kane in his prime and you have Jonathan Toews close to his prime, you should do what you can to try to win. I don't think they're going to be anything close to a dynasty again, but I think they've done a good enough job of reloading to be a contender, a good team for a long time. You know, think of like the post-2000s Red Wings, where they were good for a long time. You would never write them off as a team that would win the Cup, but they struggled to put a bunch of them together here lately. I think you could see the Hawks going that way. You know, like the post-Fedorov, Yzerman era Red Wings.
You obviously there's a pretty easy explanation to why that happened. The salary cap ended up making it really difficult to keep the proverbial band together and to keep the ship moving in the right direction when you're constantly having to hemorrhage players and develop new ones.
Yep, you're right about that. I just, the word rebuild, I think they're a long way from that.
I would agree.
Mailman Tom from Vegas emails. He said, "What's the word on the Cody Franson PTO? That's the professional tryout that I reported probably 2 months ago. There's nothing new on that. I'm assuming Franson's still trying to find a deal, and if he doesn't, he's one of the guys the Hawks could invite to camp for a tryout. That's what I've heard. I've not heard any different since then. I've asked for updates, and there really are none because it's just wait and see. If he doesn't have a deal, he might be invited." So. That's that. But he brings up a good question here. He says, since the Golden Knights have 11 NHL defensemen on the roster, do you think it's possible the, quote, future considerations from the Kruger trade might be one of these players after the Hossa LTIR placement? That's a really good question, and I think there could be something to that because the Hawks don't want to, you know, be over the cap. They've got to wait to put Hossa on IR until the season begins. So maybe once that's made, that deal is consummated and maybe that player comes the other way. That would be ideal if you sort of think about it, because they do have a glut of NHL-ready defensemen.
Yeah, I could see that.
All right. Dynamite drop-in, James. Thanks.
I didn't really have anything to add. I felt like you nailed it right on the head.
I'm just kidding. There's really no expansion beyond that point to make.
Yeah.
And he also asked, please tell me the only reason Michael Roosevelt was signed was to fulfill the expansion requirement, and will he be released eventually so I can take down the noose from the rafters? Don't hang yourself over Michael Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's a really bad reason to do that, by the way.
Yeah. I think he's going to stick around this year and just be your number 8, number 9 defenseman and help some of the young players and all that stuff. I don't think his cap hit is so low. If it becomes a problem, they'll figure something out. But
they can bury him in Rockford, and they won't have to worry about it.
I wonder if they would do that to him, though.
Probably
like a guy who's got that much NHL experience and that many skins on the wall.
I bet they'd give him his unconditional release if they did that.
Right. And then last question from Mailman Tom says, how about a Madhouse Chicago podcast live broadcast from Vegas before the Hawks Knights game?
Yes!
That would be super. And this sounds like a good time to tell you about our GoFundMe page, because there's no way in hell that's happening without a lot of funding. No, I think that's a pipe dream. Maybe if we become mega stars in the podcast world in 2 or 3 years, we could do that. But right now, not an opportunity. But yeah, GoFundMe.com/MadhousePod. Also, Patreon.com/MadhousePod. Two ways to donate to the podcast. Again, every penny goes to the podcast, not to us, not in our pockets, anything like that. So, yeah, there's that. I just want to do a long one today.
There's
I think
that.
Long one, short one, right? Is that the way to do it?
Yeah.
We're having a meeting here on the air.
I believe that's how it works, yeah.
Dan Larson, asked the same exact question that Tom did about Vegas. Good job.
Why does everyone want us to go to Vegas? Do they think we're going to get married go out there?
The defenseman thing.
Oh.
Yeah, we're already married.
Yeah, that's true, we are.
All right, this is a good question. Maybe this is a crowdsourcing thing. Email here from Jeffrey says, I'm a college student from Illinois going to an Indiana school, and my apartment has basic cable, but I do not get any Chicago channels that I would get if I was back in my hometown. Unfortunately, I'm in the blackout area of the Blackhawks for NHL TV, and getting a Dish or DirecTV subscription is out of the question because of money. What would be the best way I could watch the Blackhawks this season while at college? Also, thanks for adding me on Snapchat, James. I can't wait to hear your puns and see your cat pictures. Love the podcast so much. I don't really have an answer for that, Jeffrey. I'm sure there are people who are more I just told the story of me searching for a feed of the McGregor fight all night last night, so I don't know how to find that stuff. But I'm sure someone could respond via email. We'll send a response to you or something like that. But if anyone has any idea, please help Jeffrey out. We get this question a lot,
yep.
And I don't know. I truly don't know how to do it, how to get around it. And it seems like, you know, NHL.TV or NHL, whatever they're calling it, should find a way to know, like, there's no way for me to see the Hawks. It shouldn't be that difficult. So first thing I would suggest is anyone who's affected like that, where you have no option to see the Hawks, send them an email. Find someone and say, look, I'm in the blackout zone, but I can't get it on. I don't get the local channels, so I'm screwed here. The more they know and the more information you give them, they're not doing it to spite you, right? I think they're probably making their best guess at, like, the borders and things. Let them know. This is my situation. Here's my provider. Here's exactly where I live. Here's what I want to do, and here's what I can't do. The more information those people have to work with, the better they'll be able to, as the system grows and gets better, because more and more people are cutting the cord every day, they'll find a way to better accommodate the fans. So don't think that they're just trying to shut you out to piss you off. That's not the case. They need information, so give it to them. So that would be my suggestion. Email them, tell them your situation, and hopefully enough people do that, and it will get fixed eventually. But short term, hopefully some of our listeners can help out. And always, you know, tweet. We can retweet you, and maybe people can help you that way as well, at MadhousePod on Twitter. Last question goes to Jacob K. He says, in honor of the McGregor-Mayweather, what was something that you were hyped for but ended up being disappointing? A sporting event, a piece of entertainment, a consumer product, anything else? So what is something you were excited for and ended up disappointed in? James, aside from me, what is your answer to that question?
Oh, man. That's an intense question, dude.
I'll give you some time since you didn't know it was coming. Mine was, I was in high school, so it had to be 94, 95. I wanted to see Green Day at about the, right when Dookie was starting to peak. Like, right when they were really starting to hit their biggest moment of their, you know, coming out party, I guess you would call it. I saw them at the UIC Pavilion, went there, was super excited. Me and four friends found a way to get there, get tickets. That's a big deal for four high school students, right? We get to the show, Screeching Weasel opens. They're great. So we're super excited. Green Day comes out, and I think they played three or four songs and left pissed off because there was a fight in the mosh pit, and that was the end of the concert. That will forever stand out to me as, like, one of the biggest disappointments. Because, like, for a guy, for us now, James, guys in our 30s, to go, all right, I'm going to go to a concert, it's not a huge thing. We've got the income that we can do that. It's not going to kill us. We got cars. We can get there pretty easily. We got transportation. But for four high school guys to coordinate, get money, get the tickets bought, that was back when you had to go to, like, Carson's to buy your tickets from Ticketmaster. To do that and have the show last, like, 15, 20 minutes was brutal. So rough. That sucked.
Hmm.
Also, the ShamWow was a disappointment.
There's nothing really that's immediately springing to mind. Like, I feel like I always try to find, like, the best in a situation, I guess. But, yeah, I'm kind of drawing a blank on this one. Maybe what I'll do is I'll call this my homework assignment for next week, and I will come out blazing with things that have disappointed me in some way.
I have a new answer to mine. My biggest disappointment in my life is that James was not able to come up with anything that's ever disappointed him.
You know what? I'm sorry that I'm a happy-go-lucky guy.
You are. That's why I love you. Aww. Truly, it's true. That's why I associate with you, because you are infinitely positive, which is great. All right, do you have a winner of the hockey card?
I got to be honest with you. I think that last question about that stumped me on the biggest disappointment, I think we're going to go ahead and I'm going to say that I would be disappointed if we did not give that gentleman the card.
The card is a 1992 Bobby Holik Pro Set. Why is this card cool, you ask? Because he's in the green Hartford Whalers jersey.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. This is his after his rookie season. 78 games, 21 goals, 22 assists, 113 penalty minutes. Bobby Holik, a good player for a long time. It's just too bad that most of it was in New Jersey and no one noticed. Right? I mean, God, there's so many guys like that. Like, Brodeur and Stevens are the two that have sort of, like, risen above their lot in life in New Jersey, but they've had so many good, great players that it just kind of like, oh, yeah, that guy. Like, oh, Bobby Holik. Yeah, that's right. He was pretty good, I guess. Oh, yeah, Patrick. Oh, yeah, she was good for a long time, I suppose. I don't know why the Devils are so, like, on the pay no mind list for people.
I just thought of my thing.
Yes!
It just came back to me. When I was 18, I was fresh out of high school. The Cubs were getting ready to play the Braves in Game 3 of the NLDS at Wrigley Field. And the pitching matchup was Mark Pryor and Greg Maddux. It was like this big, huge event. Like, everyone wanted to go. My buddy found someone who was selling his tickets for a preposterously low amount of money. So we were going to go. We were totally just going to be like, you know what? I'll skip school today. We'll go up to Chicago. It'll be great. We were literally in the car on the way north to go buy the tickets from the guy. And he called us and said, I'm charging $400 a ticket instead. And we were like, no, you agreed to sell us these tickets. You can't do that. And he's like, yeah, I can. You didn't sign anything. So we literally turned around on the highway and drove back and watched the game home.
Oh, man.
Because that guy, that douche nozzle, decided he wanted to screw over a couple of 18-year-old kids. So I did not get to see the Cubs ultimately win at Wrigley Field that night to take a 2-1 series lead over the Braves. I was going to, and then I didn't.
That's a big kick in the nads.
Yeah.
Oy.
So thanks a lot for making me relive that.
Well, you win a Bobby Holik hockey card for making James sad. Congratulations. All right, with that, we're going to wrap up the podcast. We said it was going to be short. We lied. It's an hour 10.
We totally lied.
We got to edit some things out, but because James lost his internet there for about 10 minutes.
I have no idea what the hell happened. Just like literally all of a sudden my internet was gone.
I knew you were gone. I just, because usually I can hear like what's going on behind you, like a fan or just general ambiance.
Yep.
And there was nothing. I said, James, are you there? And you were not.
I
it was
died.
Very sad. It was a sad moment for me.
Oh.
Thank you all for listening to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. We'll be back soon with more hot hockey action. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Hawk on Hawk hockey action.
So and it's almost September. Says. Hockey is right around the corner. Bear with us. We can't
Bears.
Wait either. Yeah, Bears. About to go watch the Bears. Go watch Trubisky light up Nashville.
Trubisky's going to knock them dead.
That's right, my friend. The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast has been brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. Mariska's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933. And Chuck's Southern Comforts Cafe with two locations in Burbank and in Darien. Visit chuckscafe.com. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you very, very soon on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.